Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind. It was night again. The Waystone Inn lay in silence, and it was a silence of three parts. The most obvious part was a hollow, echoing quiet made by things that were lacking. If there had been a wind, it would have sighed through the trees, set the inn sign creaking on its hooks, and brushed the silence down the road like trailing autumn leaves. If there had been a crowd, even a handful of men inside the inn, they would have filled the silence with conversation and laughter, the clatter and clamour one expects from a drinking house during the dark hours of night. If there had been music, but no, of course there was no music. In fact, there were none of these things, and so the silence remained. Inside the Waystone, a pair of men huddled at one corner of the bar. They drank with quiet. My name's Alex Duncan. I'm a teacher and was an actor for 10 years before that. I'm also a writer. My novels Phenodery and The Versatiles are available in most places. I also write for theatre and for the radio. You may have heard Whistle Once More for Ginny in the late autumn. If you didn't, you can listen to it on manxradio.com, if you're brave enough. Now, when offered up the challenge of picking one book from every book I've ever read, I'm filled with a deliciously cruel indecision. I'm the habitual bookworm. Everywhere I go, there'll be a book about my person. If there isn't, I feel a panic set in. What if I'm held up? What if I have 5 minutes to spare? What will I do? As for picking a favourite or a recommendation at the very least, do I pick a Roald Dahl, the Twits or George's Marvellous Medicine from my childhood that had me in hysterics, or the book I needed to read by torchlight under the covers hours past my bedtime, Richard Adams' Watership Down, the first book I became dangerously obsessed with, poring over all the minutiae and lore it hinted at, Terry Pratchett's Truckers, the book that made me weep so much in public someone came over to ask me if I was all right, Nicholas Evans' Smoke Jumpers, or the book that began a love affair with mythic fantastical worlds, Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, of course, or the book I always find myself recommending to others, Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth, or anything by the authors I return to time and time again, Susanna Clarke, C.J. Sansom, Scott Lynch, H. Rider Haggard, G.K. Chesterton, Brandon Sanderson, Bernard Cornwell, Iris Murdoch, Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, I could go on. But back to this book. I've chosen a relatively new book, certainly in comparison to many already mentioned, a book I've returned to numerous times, and with each new reading I find new illuminations, new mysteries, new stories, new journeys, new sorrows, new jokes, new heartbreak, new hidden secrets and fables and wonders. A book so dedicated to reminding you of the unpretentious joy of beautiful language, simply the right words in the right order. Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind. This is a book that will not appeal to all. Indeed, if I mention the genre fantasy, many will immediately switch off. Admittedly, not as many as when I was young. To be an avid fan of fantasy meant to be the keeper of a relatively guilty secret. Now we live in a world post-Game of Thrones and The Witcher. Just as Peter Jackson had hoped, the geek has inherited the earth. But here is a new benchmark. Fantasy as literature, if you like. The story is a simple one. A landlord of an inn in a war-torn land is hiding his identity. He is really the most powerful man the world has ever known. Why he is there and what he is hiding from, we don't know. When a scribe, a chronicler, arrives at the inn, the man decides to tell him his story. "It's a long story," he says. "It will take 3 days to tell." this book is the first day. But as with any tome, this is just the surface and it's what's underneath that counts. This book is really a look behind the curtain. It's a book about deconstructing a myth, a book about creating a reputation, about stories, about friendship, love, trust, and, yes, it's a book about magic. Never has the need and value of money been so explicitly described and profound. Never has music been translated into words so perfectly. And never has the life of an actor been described so accurately. Our narrator is the flame-haired Kvothe, and as he tells us his remarkable story, from roguish child touring with a ragged troupe of players and musicians called the Edamar Rû, to living as an orphaned vagrant on the city streets of Tamray, fighting for scraps of food and clothing, to entering the university with a capital U to study the subtle art of naming and living on little more than his wits alone and the odd dodgy loan, we are lost under his spell. Kvothe is at once charming, conniving, loyal, mischievous, jealous, witty, dangerous, impulsive, poetic, and damned hard-working. He is, in so many respects, who we want to be. And to spend hours in his company, as we the reader do, sat at the bar with him in the Waystone Inn, is nothing but inspiring. Like some crazed teenager, I find myself carrying around an actual iron drab, a coin from their currency worth barely more than a few pennies, in my bag always to remind me of him. I'd go so far to say that this is the Oliver Twist of fantasy and Rothfuss is our Dickens. And, as we're now in the thick of winter, here's a story to lose yourself in on these dark nights. Wrap up tight and enjoy. Just don't mention the Chandrian out loud. They'll find you. Here's a little excerpt from the prologue. The third silence was not an easy thing to notice. If you listened for an hour, you might begin to feel it in the wooden floor underfoot and in the rough, splintering barrels behind the bar. It was in the weight of the black stone hearth that held the heat of a long-dead fire. It was in the slow back and forth of a white linen cloth rubbing along the grain of the bar. And it was in the hands of the man who stood there, polishing a stretch of mahogany that already gleamed in the lamplight. The man had true red hair, red as flame. His eyes were dark and distant, and he moved with the subtle certainty that comes from knowing many things. The Waystone was his, just as the third silence was his. This was appropriate, as it was the greatest silence of the three, wrapping the others inside itself. It was deep and wide as autumn's ending. It was heavy as a great river-smooth stone. It was the patient, cut-flower sound of a man who is waiting to die.